The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Hi, everybody. Welcome on into the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm. Got a lot to get to here on a busy Monday. Happy Thanksgiving week. A lot to be thankful for and a lot of great stuff as we are pushing through tail end of the football season, whether it's the college season. Can't believe we're already in the final week of the regular season. And on the prep level, we are just cruising through the postseason, and there have been so many good games. I was over doing sideline for Chandler and Brophy, and man, what a back and forth game that was. It was super fun to be there, and it seems like every single week, week in, week out, there have been some great games on that front as well. We're going to be joined by John Wilner. He's sitting down with Sam Valenti, talk about the Territorial Cup here on Friday. And then Jody Jackson will be joined by Eliav Gabay to discuss the Cardinals and their newest way to lose against the Jaguars. It has just been a tough year here for the Cards, but we will get to all of that. And we are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you and taking care of your business. All right, let's get to the game on Friday. The Territorial Cup, ASU struggled for three quarters offensively, at least against Colorado. The defense came up big. ASU gave away the ball four times, and there were only 3 points scored because of that. The defense is playing lights out. Brian Ward is making himself some money this year. I have a feeling he has been so good with this unit, and they have responded, and they are playing with their hair on fire. They've been so good. Offense definitely need to figure some things out here to really get going, but in the fourth quarter they responded well. Relik Brown going over 1,000 yards, and this is just adding to the list for Sean Aguano. Okay, this is his eighth year with Arizona State. Six times his running back has gone over 1,000 rushing yards on the year, every year minus COVID, and that 6 of 8 also includes the COVID year. So really, there was one year where it was a full season where the running back did not go for 1,000 rushing yards, but 1,000 total yards. And that was 2023 when that offense was really struggling. Every other time, he has had his featured back hit over 1,000 yards. And it's been so impressive, just the consistency that he has brought to that room. He just finds studs, puts him in great positions. So kudos to Sean Aguano and kudos to all of those running backs. And then on U of A side, kind of similar game, like back and forth game with Baylor. And then in the fourth quarter, they just ran away with it. And like we said with Brian Ward, I think Danny Gonzalez deserves a lot of recognition as well. U of A's defensive coordinator, formerly ASU's defensive coordinator. He has really got that unit humming and playing at a high level. Throughout the year so far in the fourth quarter, they're giving up just 36 points in the fourth quarter. So they are shutting the door on teams as the games progress. So this is going to be a really fun one. Definitely want to dive in more to this. But both teams are 8-win teams right now. That's a rarity for this rivalry. And I think that's really what's been holding back this rivalry on a national scale. If you grew up here, if you've been here a while, you understand the history of the Territorial Cup. You understand the hatred between these two fan bases, between these two teams. It really is a unique rivalry. One of the best in college football, but there is something holding it back. And a lot of times it is either one team's really good and one team's really bad. One team with a win gets bowl eligibility and the other one is going home. Or it's two teams that are just having a stinker of a year, and this is the bragging rights they get for the next 12 months, and hopefully they can run it back and be slightly better. But the last 2 years, it's been, U of A comes in 2023, and they're playing at a super high level, while ASU is getting their footing with Kenny Dillingham in year one, and all those injuries along the offensive line, and they're just trying to survive, and it was a stinker of a game. And then the next year, 2024, U of A struggling 4-win team, ASU trying to get into the Big 12 championship. And they flexed their muscle. They did what they needed to do. It was an important game. But if you look at it in a vacuum of just how was this game as a fan of two teams going head to head, it was a stinker of a game. So there have been very few times that both of these teams are bowl eligible. Last time was 2017 that they're coming in both eligible. They know they're playing in the postseason. This is not their last game of the year. It's been since 2014 that they've had at least 8 wins each going head to head. Okay, you want to raise the profile of this? You want to get national recruits looking at this game while the Iron Bowl's going on, while other big time rivalry games are going on? This is how you do it. You need both teams to be really good going head to head, and there need to be big ramifications if you win this game or if you lose this game. Okay, ASU has an outside shot to still make the Big 12 championship. Okay, they need some help, but they need to win this game. U of A, they're on the outside looking in on that, but they can get a bowl game that they already have. They can get an even better one. Okay? This is how this state gets more respect. And I know there are some going to be some fans that are like, I'm an ASU fan. Screw U of A. I want them to have 0 wins when ASU plays them in the Territorial Cup. And there are U of A fans that are like, screw ASU. I want them to have 0 wins. But that's the short-sighted view, folks. Okay, you need this game to have teams that are both in it and have big moments happening with big implications, not just, okay, they took the Territorial Cup and they got to take their lap around the field, and then their season ended and the coaches have to go recruit because they couldn't handle the rest of the year. Okay? It's great that there's so much weight on this game. But if both teams are good, that's a good thing for the state. That's a good thing for both programs, okay? And the way that Kenny Dillingham has this thing running right now, the way that Brent Brennan was able to bounce back after a rough year, they actually got a real offseason. He got to make some real hires and bring in Seth Dagey and bring in Danny Gonzalez. And they've been able to really play at a high level, okay? And I think this is going to be a really good game. U of A, the road favorite. Wasn't expecting that. Okay, I go on the Wildcast weekly with Michael Lev and Justin Spears. We do our Big 12 Bonanza, do our picks. And I asked them heading into this game, hey, both teams win. You know, U of A takes care of Baylor. ASU beats Colorado. Let's say it's a 7-point win against Colorado. It was much bigger, but ASU did struggle for 3 quarters. What do you think the line is? And we all kind of agreed, probably ASU about 2.5. So a slight surprise, but kind of in that swing rate, certainly. I think this is going to be a really good game. I think it's going to come down to the defenses. I think it's going to be Jeff Sims needs to take care of the football. They need to get Jeff Sims looking like what he looked like against Iowa State. Get some power run going. Make him look like Cam Newton at Auburn. Okay. I think Relique Brown's going to get his. I think Noah Fifita is going to get his. These are two of the best defenses going head-to-head. Brian Ward against Danny Gonzalez. I think both of these guys made themselves a lot of money this year. You know, Brian Ward might be in conversations for some head coaching jobs. Okay? Maybe some other programs are going to start sniffing around for the job that he's done, because he's done a tremendous job since he got to Tempe. And yes, there's a lot of experience on this ASU defense. But he has been pulling the levers for a lot of the majority of the season. There have been many times where it's like, yeah, the defense just didn't bring it today. Defense, you know, as this ASU offense was figuring it out against Colorado, they were the ones keeping it in the game. And it would be, hey, there's a fumble at their own 10-yard line. Hey, go take care of business against Colorado. Okay. ASU gave up 4 turnovers, and there were only 3 points that came from that. That is an insane stat. They're playing their tails off right now on that side of the football. So this is going to be a really fun game. I want this to be year in and year out, and I might be in the minority. You know, it might just be fans against fans, and they don't want good things for the other team, and I get that. But if you can take it, if you can look at it, you know, the forest, not the trees, this is a good thing if both teams are really, really good. Okay. If we look at the quarterbacks, we got Jeff Sims, who has had his moments. Look, Sam Levitt goes down. A lot of people were like, all right, season's over. Sims is playing really, really well, 3-0 as a starter since he took over in this capacity, you know, knowing he was the full-time starter. There have been some moments that fumble, that interception against Colorado, can't have that, cannot have that against U of A because they will take advantage. That secondary is scary, especially at the safety position. And then you have Noah Fifita playing a bounce-back year for him. Record-setting year for him. Okay, there's going to be a Noah Fifita statue at some point down the line. 10, 15 years from now, he's been an important part of U of A through some good seasons and some bad seasons, and he's a big reason that they're back. So if I have to pick a quarterback in this one, I'm probably picking Noah Fifita. If we look at running backs, you know, and the two rooms, you have Risino and Mahdi that are playing well for U of A. Craig's in there as well, but he's injured. I don't think he's going to be playing in this one. And then you have Relique Brown. If I have to pick a room, maybe I'm picking U of A just because of the depth. But if I'm ranking these running backs, Relique Brown's number one. He's been so good. And as Jeff Sims has come into his own, I think Relique's been that much better of a receiver as well. He's had a couple big touchdown receptions, and he was this close to having another touchdown reception against Iowa State. So he's been an absolute monster. Okay. If we look at the wide receivers, I think it's kind of the same thing. If you look at the room as a whole, U of A might have the slight edge. Jordan Tyson, far and away, is the best receiver that's going to be in this game. I think the real question is how healthy, how many snaps do we get out of Jordan Tyson? Because he torched U of A before he got hurt last year. Okay. He had some big catches against Colorado, but you could tell he was on a pitch count, you know, still trying to figure it out. I think with Jeff Sims, the ball has been spread around a bit more. And that's been a good thing. Derek Eusebio has had some big plays. Malik McClain starting to play a little more consistent. Jalen Moss finally feels like that injury is finally behind him, and he's playing at a high level. Okay. But you look at Chris Hudson, he's playing really well for U of A. Trey Spivey's been a guy that, you know, he's on a rate right now where it's like he has 12 touches on the year and 7 touchdowns or something ridiculous like that. So that 1-2 punch, Gio Richardson has come on strong. One of the young guns. I'm excited to see Richardson, Spivey, Brandon Phelps next year. I think a lot of those Arizona guys can step in, and it's cool that they're local guys playing. O-line. I think it depends a lot about the health of where U of A's line is. The injuries are kind of adding up for those guys. Ty Buchanan's playing really well. I think if it's a fully healthy or healthy-ish O-line, I might give the edge to U of A. ASU's been good. They've cycled in some of these young guys. We've seen a lot of penalties, though. A lot of holdings, a lot of false starts, some timing things. Some of it is the young guys are jumping in right away and it's going, but you're also hearing names of guys that have been playing for 2 or 3 years. And that was kind of a detriment in that first half against CU. So that's kind of a coin flip there. Defensively, D-line, you got to go ASU. They're so deep. They're so talented. CJ Fight's a monster. Justin Watley's playing his best football we've seen. He's been bullying people. Clayton Smith, you know, probably the most talented guy and just goes about his business. I love the way he approaches things. Then you go Elijah O'Neal. You go Anthony Cooper. You know, you go Jacob Kungaika. Like, this is a deep group. Wow, the way they've constructed this group, it's talented. They love talking to. Practice is so fun with those guys. They talk so much smack to each other. It is absolutely hilarious. Linebackers. U of A's kind of had to cycle through some guys, but they're It feels like they're kind of finding their way. You know, Kennedy, you can put him as an edge. You can put him as an outside linebacker. Love the way that guy plays. He is a monster. But I don't think you can go against Jordan Crook, Keyshawn Elliott, Tate Romney. Okay, I know I'm missing some guys. Martell Hughes has been huge when he's stepped in. Okay. That's a really experienced group. Keyshawn Elliott's playing at a high level. I think he's going to end up on an NFL roster and have a nice little career. For as good as he was last year, I feel like he kind of tapered off tail end of the year last year. Part of it was injuries, maybe just kind of hitting slightly a wall. He's been so consistent. Jordan Crook's been a monster. Okay, Anthony Cooper. When you look back when ASU took over, I think in 2023, when they went 3-9, that linebacker group overachieved more than any group. And it was solely because of there was no depth. Caleb McCullough stepped in. Trey Brown was in there. Tate Romney. They just didn't have a lot of depth, but that group produced. And then the next year, you had Zyrus come in. You had Keyshawn Elliott. You had Jordan Crook. McCullough, you know, kind of felt like at the beginning, maybe the guy on the outside looking in, he was one of their most consistent guys down the stretch. Okay. And then this year, you have many of those guys coming back, minus McCullough. And then you have young guys coming in too, like Martell Hughes. So the AJ Cooper, I think is I think he's a future defensive coordinator. But with the way he's handled that group, he's been so good. I also glossed over the tight ends. Didn't mean to do that. Jason Mond's group has been incredible. U of A, I think they use their guys effectively, but I think for what Shamon Mateer means to this offense, what Cameron Harpole means to this offense, you got AJ Ia waiting in the wings, Kamari Anderson. I'd take ASU's tight ends in that matchup. Shamon, he's already surpassed his totals from last year, interceptions. I think he has more touchdowns now. But you got to remember, that was with the first two games. He had one reception in the first two games. He was really predominantly a blocker. And you wondered, like, is he looking around going, what the heck? And he squashed that right away. He was ready to work. He was blocking. He's so crucial to this blocking game. Same thing with Cameron Harpole. I think the future is really bright with that tight end room, too. If we look at the secondaries of these two teams, I think cornerbacks, I would go Arizona State. Keith Abney's playing his butt off right now. Javon Robinson has come on, played well in the second half. What we saw, kind of similar to last year. Rodney Bimage, you know, of course, he's out right now, but he was stepping in, playing really, really well. But if you go safeties, I mean, I think these are probably the two strongest, most debated groups, because you got some really good safeties on ASU. Boogie Wilson has stepped in and been so good. You know, played at a high level. You're missing X Alford. That should be detrimental to your defense. And Boogie Wilson has kind of said, nope, I'm going to step in. I'm going to play at a high level. He's been really good. But Treydon Stokes, Dalton Johnson, for U of A, those guys have played a lot of football, and a lot of football together. They mean a lot to that team. So I think if it's safeties, I'd have to go Arizona's way for just the way those two on the field, off the field, in the locker room, those are some important guys. And at speed, that is more a decision about how good U of A's is versus it's not an inferiority for ASU. It's these are two really, really good groups. And I think U of A just has it by a smidge. Special teams, both units have struggled. But I think you have to go ASU. Jesus Gomez is more consistent of a field goal kicker right now. And he has been good. He's been really good. I think he's been as advertised. When they can get those snaps down and everything like that, he's missed a couple here and there, but like He's also gone out and won you some games. That Baylor game is not, you know, that Texas Tech game. Those aren't wins without Jesus Gomez. He's played very, very well. Kenyon Floyd looked good against Colorado. You know, I know he's battled injuries. They haven't really... It's tough to know how much that affects a punter. But I thought he had a good night against Colorado. So that might be, you know, maybe some of those struggles, those early season things figuring out. I'd give the special teams to the Sun Devils. So all that to say, who the heck knows what's going to happen on Friday. But two teams that I think are playing well should be a battle. If we're looking at the coaching staffs, it's going to mean a lot to both sides. Brent Brennan's coaching really well, but I think Kenny's going to have a couple of those things, that fake punt. Okay, that special teams against West Virginia. There are going to be a couple things that I think that are in there. You know, the Jordan Tyson pass where he threw it up. I think there are going to be some wrinkles in there that might make the difference for Arizona State. So going to be a really fun back and forth game. John Wilner is going to break this down even further with Sam Valenti and then Jody Jackson talking all things Cardinals with Eliav Gabay. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmont Show.
Hi, I'm Sam Valenti, joined by John Wilner. It is rivalry week in college football, which of course means it's time for Arizona State and Arizona to do battle for the Territorial Cup. Both teams are 8-3 coming into this game on Friday night in Tempe. John, what can viewers look forward to when they tune in for this exciting matchup?
Well, probably a close game. You know, a lot of the Territorial Cups turn it kind of lopsided, especially recently. But this should be very close. Could be one of the better games we've seen. It's the first time since 2014 that they both will have at least 7 wins. And that game was pretty entertaining. Arizona won 42-35, I think it was. So I would imagine we'll see something similar.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, you know earlier, both teams 8-3 coming into this matchup. What do you think are the main keys to victory for both teams here?
I mean, the first one, and that's the case in almost any rivalry game, is controlling your emotions, not trying to do too much, especially the quarterbacks. And then, hence limiting mistakes, right? I mean, there's a much better chance that this game is going to be decided by mistakes than by, you know, positive big plays. And that's often the case, whether it's special teams mistakes, turnovers on offense, bad penalties, those kind of things. I think whichever quarterback, especially between Sims and Fifita, does a better job just playing within himself, following the game plan, not trying to force things, that team will have a much better chance to win.
Sort of going off that, what do you make of this quarterback matchup between Jeff Sims, who is starting his first Territorial Cup game?
Yep.
You know, and I'm sure people, you know, at the beginning of the season would not be expecting Jeff Sims to be the starter for ASU in this game. And then, of course, on the other side, you have Noah Fifita, who is no stranger to the rivalry.
Right. This will be Fifita's third start in the rivalry. You know, Sims, it is his first Territorial Cup as a starter, but the guy has been in college since the single wing, right? And so you have to figure that experience, all the different schools, all the different conferences, I think he will be okay. I'd be surprised if he plays like a Territorial Cup rookie, given the extensive experience he's had. And you know, he's played really well. He's done exactly what ASU needed him to do these last few games since taking over for Leavitt. I don't think he is going to be, like, if you're checking off strengths and weaknesses for each, I don't look at Sims as a weakness at all for ASU. I think that there's other things they got to deal with that are much more likely to cost them the game. I think Sims will be just fine.
Absolutely. And and I'll give a lot of credit to Sims. He's actually really impressed me in these last couple of weeks, being able to lead ASU to these victories. I really, in my personal opinion, I think this game, I feel like it's going to come down to turnovers. I feel like this is one of those games where it's going to come down to turnovers, and it's going to come down to what team is able to maybe make less mistakes than the other
Yep.
team. I really think that at some point in this one, there's certain events are going to happen. Those are going to be the deciding
Yeah,
factors.
probably. You tend to get blowouts in rivalry games when there's a huge disparity in personnel or in trajectory and culture. We saw 2 years ago, we saw that, right? ASU was rock bottom and Arizona was rolling. Last year, it was reversed. ASU was rolling. Arizona had bottomed. They are both in good shape. And so, given that the personnel on each side, I don't think there's a big difference. It's probably going to be all about mistakes, maybe one or two big plays, and a real competitive fourth quarter.
In your opinion, what makes the Territorial Cup so special? What do you think sets it apart from other big rivalry games in college football?
It is not, I would not classify it as one of the elite rivalry games because the programs haven't been good enough for high level stakes. You often have conference championships or playoff bids, Rose Bowl bids on the line, but it is as good as it gets for hatred. I mean, not pure hatred, which is a huge part of any rivalry, and I respect it. And I lived in Tucson for 6 years, so I know how much hatred there is for ASU. And the fact that there have been a lot of games where inexplicable things have happened, big upsets. It has all the ingredients for a great rivalry game, except for the fact the stakes have not had national significance typically over the years.
I would agree with that. And I'd also say this is what I think is so great about this is that ASU, all ASU focuses on for a rival is U of A. All U of A focuses on for a rival is ASU. They're, both schools don't really have even like a secondary rival. Like Michigan, at
Yep.
least, Michigan has, there's Ohio State, but there's also Michigan State. Like between these two schools, it's just the hatred is equal and it's fierce.
It is. There's no doubt about that. I've seen it firsthand.
For sure. Now, lastly, big golden question here. Which team are you picking to win as of right now on a Friday night? Sun Devils or Wildcats?
I'm going to pick Arizona. Just because the trajectory of the two right now, I think Arizona is, they are playing a lot like ASU did last year and a lot like Arizona did in 2023, where they have zoomed past reasonable expectations and they're kind of playing with house money. ASU, I wouldn't say ASU is playing with house money, right? They've done very well since Levitt got hurt, no doubt, and they do have a very narrow path to the Big 12 championship game. But Arizona, it's just they're free and easy, and they have got a lot of confidence right now. I'm going to pick Arizona. I do think it'll be real close. I saw Arizona open as a slight favorite. I think ASU is now a slight favorite. It makes a lot of sense to me that the betting line is going to be close to a pick, and I think it'll be very close. But if I were going to put a nickel on it, I'd probably pick Arizona to win by 3 points, 7 points, something like that.
Well, no matter the outcome of this contest, it's going to be a good one in Tempe, and I think it's going to be super exciting. John, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
It is time to talk Cardinals for better or for worse, Jody, for the fans watching. But regardless, we have the great Jody Jackson here with us. Brought to you by Shamrock Farms Rockin' Protein. Jody, Thank you for always taking the time. And I know some of the conversations have been tough lately, but quite simply, even with all these heartbreaking losses, what to you is the story of the season for the Cards?
Wow. The story of the season. Yeah, not being able to finish games. You know, I look back and it's never this simple. So when media people say like this broke them or whatever, you kind of roll your eyes. But the Tennessee Titans game, I feel like just kind of broke this team. It's the last time we saw Kyler Murray. Not to say that he's been the answer. I love what Jacoby Brissett's been doing. It's just that everyone knows they're going to drop back and pass every single time. And while that is really hard to do. I don't want to discredit Jacoby. That's really hard to do, and he's connecting quite a bit. But it's hard to win games. But there's just so many things. And Eliav, that was such a tough loss to the Jaguars. Like I felt like with four turnovers on defense, they got four turnovers. They did not turn the ball over on offense. I feel like, you know, Jonathan Gannon last week said we turned it over three times. We were negative three. And you know he didn't throw Jacoby under the bus there, but he did throw two picks. And I feel like you know when you're throwing 57 times like he did or whatever it was last week that he made 47 completions, you know I'm not gonna hang it on him. But yeah, you gotta force some things. But this week you lose that game when you're plus four. So it just tells me that unfortunately whatever happens in the meat of the game in the, for the beginning, the middle. They can't seem to win it at the end. And yesterday, for the most part, it was, you know, the calls at the end of the game were mind-boggling to me. They really were. After Michael Wilson makes that nice catch, it's just what you want, right? Drive down the field, you kind of see spins the ball, you know, they you know lose half a second there. Then they real okay, let's go. But instead of trying to spike the ball and gather themselves, they you know try to take a shot there again and happen there. They get a field goal. In that moment, you're thinking, okay, now you're going to OT, and then to just to roll the ball down the field on a fourth and four, I just don't understand it at all.
Well, one bright spot that you did mention, I will say, is Jacoby Brissett. He has been playing good ball. I think we can all agree upon that in the grand scheme of things. Has he been playing good enough or well enough to potentially make Kyler's seats a little hotter? Is that a possibility?
Oh yeah. I think, you know, unfortunately the way this has gone down with Kyler Murray, you know, I'm not really sure we're gonna see him again. I don't know if he'll be healthy. I don't know, you know, again, since mysteriously leaving that Titans game, the whole thing's been really odd. And I think Jacoby Brissett has done a great job. In fact, when he took that shot against the Jaguars, I really didn't know if he'd come back. It looked like he really had that left shoulder injured, and you saw Keaton Slovis for a couple of plays, but Jacoby Brissett has been so tough. He has come back from hit after hit, sack after sack. And by the way, the root of this problem is the lack of the running game and the offensive line play. So they're in that situation where they just have to throw all the time, and it's just difficult. But Jacoby's done a really nice job. I think he's displayed a lot of leadership. He's displayed a lot of toughness and skill, you know, throwing the ball down the field. And you know, that's what this team needs. Unfortunately, it hasn't been enough to win games, which is a little surprising. I mean, they did win that Cowboys game, but the fact that they've fallen short tells you that things go much deeper than the quarterback position here.
Right. And another one of those bright spots that you did mention was the defense. And how about the thick six from Walter Nolan the third? Excitement all around. You know the guys in that locker room were happy for him. What did you make of that play? And maybe a little bit on him for people who don't know him.
Yeah, Walter Nolan III, you know, drafted mid first round by the Cardinals and, you know, was out with the calf injury for most of the season, but he's come in and played really well. He looks like he can be a difference maker. It's something that we haven't seen right away from some of these draft picks. So this is very encouraging. On that play, though, Jalen Thompson comes up and hits Trevor Lawrence. And, you know, it's amazing because Trevor Lawrence, he didn't even go down from the hit, but he was, you know, the body got smacked and the ball came out. And so great play by Jalen Thompson on a big quarterback like Trevor Lawrence who could have, you know, possibly protected the ball there but just was unable to do that. And then what I loved was because there's been, you know, Eliav, we watched the Cardinals and the defense, you know, even when they were playing so well at times over the last two seasons and earlier this year, The one thing they haven't been able to do is like get their hands on the ball and secure it, whether it's an interception. So for Walter Nolan to be kind of right there and have to catch it with one hand and tuck it and tote that ball into the end zone, like just like a loaf of bread, like here, let's go. That was cool. That was cool for him to be able to, and guess what? It was a little contagious because then all of a sudden they caught the ball. Buda Baker caught the ball. I love Buda, but it was his first pick in a couple of years. So it just tells you that maybe, when someone was sending the message there, the big man, Walter Nolan, is like, all right, I'm going to secure this ball and take it to the end zone. And that's what he did.
Hey, you need a little bit of extra juice sometimes. That's definitely contagious. I agree with you there. I also agree with you that the running game has been lackluster. Something that could help that potentially is Trey Benson. Started practicing last week, wasn't activated. Maybe this week against the Bucks. I know you've been a fan of him since the offseason and training. What do you think is the potential of what he can add to that running back room?
I was bemoaning the loss of James Conner and Trey Benson for most of the season, but recently I've really looked at it, and Bam Knight ran hard yesterday. I just think it's the line, the offensive line, for whatever reason, and I'm starting to think that maybe it is the coaching, Clayton Adams. I was not gonna pin it on the change there, but it seems like that change has made a difference. And Clayton Adams going to Dallas and whatever magic he was working the last 2 seasons, and for whatever reason, some of these players have physically taken a step back. But Trey Benson can only help. I do believe that. Here you've got your 3-8 now. So what are you trying to do? But you have to establish a running game to try to make it easier to do everything that you're trying to do on offense. So hopefully Trey Benson can come back. I know they opened his practice window, but he was not activated for the game. So, assuming now all is going well with him, that he could probably get some snaps in this game coming up against the Bucks. So, hopefully he can help it out because, you're right. Eliav, when you can't run the ball, it just makes you very predictable. It changes everything. It makes it hard to run play action with Jacoby Brissett's willing to do it. He's willing to turn his back to that defense and hand that ball, fake the handoff. But if you're not able to run it, it doesn't help out. So hopefully Trey can change that this week.
I'm with you, especially when Jacoby is slinging it the way he has. But thank you, Jody, as always. That has been our Cardinals talk. I'm Eliav. Goodbye, Sports 360 AZ.